Well, good evening. We'll call our Tuesday, January 9th City Council meeting to order. And we will begin with a Pledge of Allegiance by Mayor Pro Tem Fonzie. Thank you. Roll call, please.
Councilmember Borbo.
Here.
Councilmember Moreno.
Here.
Councilmember Sturtevant.
Here.
Mayor Pro Tem Fonzie.
Here.
Mayor O'Malley.
Here.
All present.
Thank you. First item on the agenda is the approval of the agenda. And though there is a separate agenda for a meeting that occurs directly after this meeting, we will have to take some action on changing that agenda. We did want to alert folks that when we come to the successor agency meeting at the conclusion of City Council, we'll be moving item C1 up ahead of item B1. It shouldn't take very long to handle that, but that'll help on some logistics. So with that note, is there an approval of the agenda?
So moved.
Second.
We have a motion by Councilmember Borbo, seconded by Councilwoman Moreno. Oh, is that Mr. Sturtevant? I'm looking though. It's an echo in the room. Okay, corrected. Council by Councilmember Sturtevant, seconded by Councilwoman Moreno. Roll call, please.
Councilmember Sturtevant?
Yes.
Councilmember Moreno?
Yes, ma'am.
Councilmember Borbo?
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem Fonzie?
Yes.
Mayor O'Malley?
Yes.
5-0, motion passes.
Thank you. First item was going to be a proclamation recognizing Linda Hendy for her service with the Tascadero Chamber of Commerce. We're going to put that off until the annual meeting of the chamber because a number of folks will be giving her various awards, and we're just going to join in that. We are pleased to see Mr. Derek Kirk here this evening, who will be her replacement, which is very hard to do. But we welcome you and look forward to working with you in the future. And we will be making a presentation to Linda Hendy at their annual meeting. So with that, we'll move on to first item was the consent calendar, considered items routine, not needing a lot of discussion, unless a member of the council would like to discuss a little more or a member of the public would like to pull an item for further discussion. So any member of the council wishing to pull an item or member of the public, seeing no one change the consent calendar, I'd entertain a motion.
I move approval of the consent calendar.
Second.
We have a motion by Mayor Pro Tem Fonzie, seconded by Councilman Sturtevant. Roll call, please.
Councilmember Sturtevant?
Yes.
Councilmember Borbo?
Yes.
Councilmember Moreno?
Yes, ma'am.
Mayor Pro Tem Fonzie?
Yes.
Mayor O'Malley?
Yes.
5-0, motion passes.
Thank you. Next item is updates from the city manager.
Thank you, Mayor. The first item I want to talk about tonight is one of my favorite events. It is the annual Tamale Festival. So just a reminder, it is going to be held on Saturday, January 20th from 11 to 4 p.m. in the Sunken Gardens in downtown. This year, the event will have longer hours and even more tamales. I know last year, I think we had over 20,000 tamales, plenty of tamales to go around. There will be over 40 food and merchant vendors on hand, and over half of them will be offering a wide variety of homemade tamales from traditional to sweet to gourmet. I had a strawberry tamale last year, which was really good, kind of interesting. So looking forward to it again. We'll also have the best tamale contest, along with lots of great music, the dancing horses, the folkloric dancers, and a variety of terrific entertainment. This event will be held as scheduled, come rain, come shine. Hopefully we have a little bit nicer day than we did today. And it is free to attend and to enjoy all of the great entertainment. But if you want to have tamales, bring your wallet to buy a lot of delicious tamales. Tamales usually run around $3 a tamale, between $3 and $4, depending. For information, call 805-470-3360 or visit atascadero.com. And speaking of rain and storms. Wanted to just do a little bit reminder to everybody on preparedness for storms. So with the heavy rainfall occurring here this week and with the massive mudslides that took place overnight in Santa Barbara County, I'd like to maybe remind all our residents they should be sure to check and clear any storm drains, culverts, drain pipes, ditches, and waterways located on their property to help ensure unimpeded water flow. The city cannot go on your property to clear out debris and other things unless it's an emergency. So we're counting on all of our residents to make sure all of their drainage and creekways and all of those are clean before the heavy, heavy storms hit. We want to check and clear all roof gutters and downspouts and install gutter guards or screens if needed. Inspect and trim trees and branches that are hanging onto or scraping against roofs, and be sure to keep a watchful eye for fallen trees or tree limbs, and especially for power lines that may be knocked down. Be ready for possible storm-related power outages by checking flashlight batteries and making sure to have plenty of non-perishable food and water on hand. Ensure that leaves and grass are not blown into streets, ditches, ponds, or other waterways, as the debris will plug inlets and pipes, increasing the risk of localized flooding. That did cause a lot of problems as leaves build up and then block an area, which then causes a larger problem. Keep in mind that very heavy rainfall in a short amount of time may temporarily flood streets until a storm wash is clear, and debris that has been allowed to accumulate on inlet grates will prolong flooding issues. If needed, purchase sandbags that are available at our local hardware stores, including Miners and Home Depot. We do have sand to fill the sandbags over at Fire Station 1 on Lewis Avenue, but make sure you bring your own shovel. And finally, if unusual flooding of streets or other storm facilities occurs, call dispatch at 461-5051 right away. We do have people that are on call 24 hours a day. I know last year's during the heavy storms, they were working clearing debris, taking trees out of the roads and other things 24/7. Hopefully we do not have this year, but I want to make sure, pass the word along, reminding people to clear their drains. And with that, I'd be happy to answer any questions that council may have.
Council questions. Very good, thank you. Next item on the agenda is the community forum, which is an opportunity for any of you to speak to all of us on any topic that is not on the agenda and yet underneath our jurisdiction. So at this time, please come forward if there's an item you'd like to talk about. Welcome. Just state, we'll get a little help. If you have anything to distribute to council, just give it to the police chief there and he'll get it to us. And just state your name for the record.
My name is Vicki Burton. I live at 8630 Murata Lane. I better put my glasses on. Okay, let me see. I've lived on that property for 31 years, and I've worked in Atascadero for 26 years. And I want to just talk to you quickly about some new neighbors that moved into our neighborhood right next door to us at 8809 Atascadero Avenue. They've been there for about 5 months, and their names are Mary Lou and Mylon Elder, and I think you're going to probably be speaking with them next at your next meeting, so I thought I would just get a jump on it. They moved in, when they moved in, you know, I went over to meet them and found that they had two pigs, which I didn't think too much about at the time. You know, the pigs were a novelty for sure. And then I found out that the elders had planned on running a mini pig rescue right next door to me. And Mary Lou Elder has said that a mini pig is any pig that weighs up to 300 pounds. Can't weigh more than that, but up to 300 pounds. Before I knew it, they had built a huge barn and with lots of pig pens inside and all around the outside, and then they had accumulated 13 pigs. And it's right adjacent to my property. Those pictures are taken from my upstairs balcony window. It says the pigs are very close, and that one of the pictures shows a big hole in their backyard, which is where they dump all of the pig poop, and the manure. And, you know, we have such a fly problem at our house because of this. And everybody knows how bad pig manure smells. And the smell is just unbelievable. And the flies are like being tortured. And I just can't believe that I can't sit on my porch. I can't open any windows. And we certainly will never be able to use the balcony that's outside our bedroom window. I'm begging you to please not let these people start a pig rescue this close to my house. I've lived there for decades, and they've just moved in 5 months ago. They knew what the city code was for pigs when they moved in, and they knew what it was when they started building buildings for the pigs, and why they're allowed to just come in and ruin the neighborhood like that with that horrible smell just doesn't seem fair. And Mary Lou Elder is going to speak with you next week. She's going to explain to you how clean the pigs are and how smart they are and how cute they are. And I'll tell you that they're no different than dogs. She's going to ask the city of Atascadero to recognize mini pigs as pets and not livestock. She's going to call Atascadero's zoning law outdated.
We do have a 3-minute limit on public.
Oh, crap. I'm sorry. Well, I guess I've about covered it. I just wanted to say that we're not on the outskirts of town. We're walking distance from stores and restaurants and a school. So it's not out in the country.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Welcome, next speaker. Some of you, this may be a new experience, and we do allow 3 minutes per person. Again, there's no action taken tonight. It's just a chance to hear from you, and if there's an issue, certainly if you were going to change any zoning or any codes, that would require a whole public hearing. It would be noticed. We would have a lot of decision-making, but that's what tonight is not about. If you really have a need to share more, I will allow folks to a second round of 3 minutes at the end after everyone else has had a chance to speak. But everyone has 3 minutes. Welcome.
Hi, my name's Randy Rutkowski, and I live at 8640 Murata Lane, and my letter is in regard to the same matter that Vicki Burton spoke about. But since this isn't the proper form, it sounds like to submit this, I can go ahead. It is?
You can, yeah, we can't take any action. We can just hear from you on the topic that is under our jurisdiction.
Okay, I'm speaking for myself and my wife, Sandy Bartelt. This is to the City Council. It's our understanding that the new homeowners at the above residence want to obtain approval from the city to declare the potbelly pigs as pets so they can raise and provide rescue to these animals. They have provided information that these animals are not small animals and can weigh up to 300 pounds each. Our municipal code prohibits the use of the residential zone. The property is less than 1 acre, as required for farm animals, and it is not within the appropriate zoning for farm animals. Designating them as pets seems incongruous with the intent and requirements set forth in our municipal code. While we sympathize with the new owners and appreciate all efforts on behalf of any animal, it's unfortunate that the home is not located within the required zoning and acreage. If the Planning Commission and or City Council is considering granting approval of this unusual request, please keep in mind the potential impacts. Health and safety concerns, sanitation, smell, flies, and of course, if we have the rain like they had in Santa Barbara, the overflow of the waste material that's in their yard right now. Precedent setting. And property values and the effect that this pig rescue would have on the residential property values, and the approval of a use in violation of zoning. And I quote some of the codes in the letter. I'd like to just submit that to the council.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Welcome, next speaker. And it can be on any topic under our jurisdiction.
Hi, I'm Susan Funk from Atascadero, and I'm not going to talk about pigs. I wanted to address the council tonight about the pending sale of the Creekside property. I'm not a expert.
That is on the agenda, you know.
Okay, is it for this agency? Yeah, is that on the agenda tonight for the council?
Yeah, that is, that's not under our jurisdiction. So you could speak on that at the next meeting, which is under the successor agency's jurisdiction.
Okay. I will defer my comments until that point. Thank you.
Thank you. It helps keep so that the information received gets in the right category so anyone in the future can know what you had to say on that topic. Any other public comment on anything else not on our council's agenda? Seeing no one approach, we'll close public comment, bring it back, and those are all appropriate things to share with us. It is not anything we can take action on because we can only take action on things that are noticed, so everybody knows what the topic is and has a chance to come out and say something. And some people don't like this, but the reality is nothing happens fast in government. You don't have to worry we're going to do anything really quick. So if an issue comes up like a change in zoning, that would be something agendized, and there'd be a lot of public process, a lot of discussion on that. And really every issue that was mentioned tonight would be the type of thing that would be well thought through. Until that happens, it's really an issue of a code enforcement issue. And I'm going to turn it over somewhere between our city manager, our city engineer, our attorney, or our police chief. I bet we can get an idea of what to expect on a code enforcement issue raised. And I understand that there's been discussion not only with neighbors but with the owner of this property who has a desire to do some other things too. So what could you share with us? Where are we at?
I can share. There are limited things that I can share because it is an active code enforcement case. We did receive complaints regarding the property with the pigs that have been referenced in the neighbor. We are working with the property owner of that property to help come into compliance with existing codes and ordinances. As you said, there have been indications in the press of an interest to come to the meeting on the 23rd. If they did come to the meeting on the 23rd, it would be in a similar public comment format, and you know, if council wanted to do anything at that point, you could direct us through the process, which would be planning commission, zone code ordinance, and some of that. So, but right now, the property owner has indicated a willingness to try to work to come into compliance with existing codes and ordinances. And so that's the direction we're taking.
Thank you. And if there was going to be a change in code or a request, that would actually be quite an expensive process.
That would be a very time intensive and expensive process. It would be something that if the council wanted to undertake something along those lines, we would ask council from a staff standpoint where to prioritize that, because you do have a lot of other codes and ordinances that you have prioritized that have kind of filled our work plate for the next year or two, and so you would have to basically delay other things in order to do it, to change that code.
So it's fair to say it's not likely there'd be a code change considered soon.
It would definitely not be soon, and how likely it would be up to the council. But it is a long process if to do that.
But as it currently is, it's a code enforcement issue, and the property owner is seeking to come into compliance.
We are working with the property owner to do that, yes.
Okay, thank you. And I don't think we had any other... did you have a comment, Mr. Burbeau?
Well, not a comment. I think a question for them to perhaps clarify
okay.
to the public, if that's appropriate, and that is to clarify for the public and a listening public that what the rules currently are regarding pigs.
So currently, pigs, regardless of size, are considered swine. Pigs are not allowed on any property less than 1 acre in size. And pigs, there is a formula for how many pigs you may have, but in no case may you have more than 3 sows and 1 boar. So a maximum of 4 pigs. If you have a very large parcel of property, it's a a formula. You can find it in our Muni code.
All right. Thank you.
And that is four allowed on 1 acre or larger.
You wouldn't be allowed four on 1 acre, but you have to have at least 1 acre before you're allowed even one.
Right. Okay. And this particular parcel in question is what size?
It's about a half an acre.
Okay. So it would not currently qualify for any.
Correct.
Okay. So it would require a zoning change to have what's currently occurring.
Correct.
Okay. So I think that is pretty clear. Thank you. Any other council comments or questions? We can move on. And, of course, if any member of the public has questions, best is to send an email to the city manager. They can get you back in writing and kind of tell you what to expect. But quite frankly, code enforcement processes, if it's really truly a code enforcement issue, also can take some time. We are very respectful of everyone's rights and try to reach an agreement as soon as we can. Next item is a management report dealing with the annual road report. And I don't see any members from our... we do have... I'll let you introduce folks at some point as part of your report.
Thank you. I will have Nick do that. Thank you.
Thank you, Mayor O'Malley. Tonight's annual roads report is regarding the sales tax measure F-14 that is currently in place. A little background on it. The ordinance was adopted in July of 2014, which outlines annual reporting requirements, sets up the Citizen Oversight Sales Tax Committee. And the Atascadero voters voted this in November of 2014. The annual report actually includes financial statements and summaries. It's got a lot of details with the revenue and expenditures. Then we also have a brochure that we send out that summarizes the work done and a little background in the program. The revenues, as I mentioned, half a cent sales tax collected by retailers. This is a 12-year term, so there is a sunset on it. The monthly revenue checks are sent to the city by the state of California each month. The monthly range amounts range from about $128,000 to just over $203,000. Then they have these quarterly true-ups, they're called, where they make adjustments to the money already sent. In fiscal year 2017, which covers a period of July 1st, 2016 through June 30th of 2017, a total revenue of $2,119,420 was collected, and a total interest of $6,570 was accrued. This is just the monthly checks that we received with the true-ups, so just kind of a little more detail on that. And this is in your report as well that's attached to the packet. We had four projects that had expenditures tallied against them. The 2016 pavement resurfacing and rehabilitation, that's two separate projects. Those were both construction costs. A lot of times these projects, it's hard to, since the end of the reporting period is in the middle of the summer, that's the peak construction season, these projects often saddle each fiscal year. So we usually have 2016, 2017 projects. So the 2016 projects were designed in the previous reporting period, but we completed construction in this period. The 2017 pavement rehabilitation project was had expenditures for the design phase. And the 2017 resurfacing project had design and partial construction costs. Total expenditures of $2,138,147 was spent on the projects in the program. And then I might make a note here, that last bullet item, there's a remaining obligated expenditures of $1,925,000 from the 2017 projects that contracts were approved by council that were in the middle of construction or going into construction. So, you know, with the remaining balance in the, at the end of the reporting period, that number there, almost $1.9 million, just over, was already obligated to be spent from that balance. So just going into these projects, 2016 resurfacing, it's just a map. We just like showing before and after pictures just as proof that we did something out there. This is Arena Avenue, both north and south. This seems like quite a while ago because it was last fall that we completed these, but you know, so I'm trying to cover the period that, the reporting period. San Vicente, this was all resurfacing or maintenance. Yerba. Rehabilitation project, this one was a little more challenging. We played catch up the first couple years of the program, and we started this one kind of late in the fall. And if everyone remembers what last winter was like, it was very wet, so we kind of slugged it out there for a while and finally completed it this past spring. But this was, you know, this is more major work, a lot of mill and overlay, some full reconstruction, full digouts, Los Gatos, Cascabel, San Andres behind the high school, San Clemente, and Valley. This is kind of a balance sheet of the expenditures. I know this is really hard to read, but as again, it's in the report. This table is also in the community roads report, the brochure that's going to be going out. And as I mentioned a couple of slides previous to this, you see in the bottom line there the fund balance end of year. If you look at that last column, there's $2,361,743. That's at the end of the reporting period of June 30th, 2017. As I mentioned before, there was already obligated revenue or expenditures from the 2017 projects of just over $1.9 million. So just want to make clear that the city is not sitting on this money. We're spending it. As this money comes in, as cash flow allows, we spend this money. We try to get it out there. That the quicker we can spend it, the quicker we can get to roads, road repairs and maintenance, the better off the city is going to be. So the financial summary includes 2016 as well, fiscal year. It's kind of self-explanatory. But each year we collect roughly, we're budgeting in the capital improvement program about $2.2 million to be spent. So it's kind of where we're carrying that balance, but it's always a cash flow thing. This is one a balance sheet on page 29 of the report, and there is one error in it. Administrative Services Department does an excellent job, and they're very accurate, but this is just, it's kind of self-explanatory, very immaterial correction, but that is one correction that will need to be made. And then the community road report, this brochure is a trifold. It's also attached to your packet. Kind of summarizes the program overview of the system, a little background on the program. It provides that expenditure table that I just showed it. This table here is also included in the brochure. And then it also includes what to expect in the following year. So we do mail this to all the properties in town, so it's an estimated expenditure of about $3,500, which, if the council approves this tonight, we will promptly mail out as soon as we can. A little bit about the Citizen Sales Tax Oversight Committee. It's a 9-member committee. They are responsible for reviewing the annual report each year and making a recommendation to council. They review the report and make comments to the city staff on December 15th of this past year. They also endorse the community road report that's included in the packet. They had a few revisions requested that we made and have been included in the packet. Two members are here tonight. Scott Burgess, if you can raise your hand, is one of our newer members. And then Carol Simonen has been on the committee since it started. So I know Chair Bill Hatch would like to have been here tonight, but he is out of the town today. And we also had a few other members that couldn't make it because of sickness or other conflicts as well. This committee has been really good to work with. They've been very positive, very providing staff with very good comments and input and everything else. So it's been a very nice committee to work with. So tonight the recommendations are to approve the annual road report and approve the fiscal year 2017 community road report as well, which would include also printing and mailing out that brochure to all the properties in town. So with that, I can take any questions you have.
Thank you. And Carol and Scott, thank you for being here this evening. When we do get to the public forum or the community forum portion on this agenda item, I will give you guys first opportunity if you'd like to share anything about your experience or your thoughts on this. I'll forewarn you. Not required, but certainly welcome. Any council questions on this item? Go ahead.
Thank you for the staff report. I was wondering if you could explain for the public's use how the roads are selected that will be improved.
Sure. That's always, I love talking about this, as the council knows and city staff knows. But we each roughly 5 years, we go throughout town. We do a complete inspection on each road. We get that inventory of all those types and quantity of distresses in the pavement. We put it into a software program that's called Street Saver. It's a pavement management program. And we use a technique called critical point management, which we provide a budget in the software, and it analyzes each road throughout town. And it finds those roads that are ready to fall into a state of more expensive repair or rehabilitation that's going to be needed. So we try to catch those roads before they fall into that breakpoint, fall below that breakpoint. So if we can take care of a road for, you know, if we don't catch it soon, it's going to get to the point where we can't do a mill and overlay on it, but instead we're going to have to do a full depth reclamation, which may cost 10 times as much to do per square foot area. So we don't always do the worst roads. Sometimes the public will see us working on a road that's, to them, it's perfectly fine, and they ask, why are you worrying about that road? You should do this other road that's fallen apart. Well, that road that's fallen apart, it's gotten to the point where we can't do anything more to it to let it fall into any, it's going to be cost a certain amount of money just to bring back anyway. So we try to keep that in a safe condition for the traveling public until we find money to be able to do that. So we try to get to those roads that are really bad. I mean, it's really tough to get to all those bad roads because it costs a lot of money. And so the critical point management is the technique that we use.
Thank you for your explanation. I think the public sometimes think it's the road that the council members live on, so I wanted you to make that explanation.
Thank you. Other questions? Go ahead.
Director, just to be clear, though, it's not that we don't do any of the bad roads.
Correct.
Okay.
Those roads also do come up, You know, but a lot of times, you know, I know how the public, as I talk to the public a lot about this, is, you know, why aren't you doing, you know, this road over here that's falling apart or in really bad shape instead of worrying about this other road that seems perfectly fine? But we get to all the roads, they're all treated equally. And, you know, we do this past summer, the next reporting period, we actually got to a lot of roads that were in bad, bad shape. And I'm really happy with the work that the city is doing and its contractors. And really, we're getting great pricing, and we're coming under budget. We're really, you know, I feel like as taxpayer myself here, the city is doing a really good job at spending money wisely where it's needed. But we do get out to all the roads, correct?
I thought that was important because it is. We do want to maximize the taxpayers' money for, you know, the bang for the buck and what we get road-wise. But to be clear, it's not that none of the bad roads are gotten to. I mean, I've seen some that have been, and yay.
Correct.
But you're right. Staff is doing a great job in terms of bidding everything, coming under budget, and able to do more than we thought we were. So that's been good news for everyone. Thank you.
Yes, Councilmember Burbeau, did you also have a question?
Well, that's actually not a question, but since we're getting a little bit away from the report itself, I would point out to the public that staff has also done a good job of having a five-year plan on this. And you can go out to the website if you're curious what roads will be done out in 2019 and 20 and I think even 21. Because people have asked me questions, I've referred into the website, and they've come back and say, that was great, that answered what I wanted to know, and that is a good tool for people to use.
Thank you. Other council questions or comments? And I would say there are a number of funding categories that pay for road improvements. And I sit on the San Luis Council of Governments, which we'll be talking about a little bit later. That is an organization that passes through federal and state funds for the big projects, like our 41-101 overpass, which was the last fully funded overpass in the county. We were fortunate it was here at about a $31 million cost. The categories that we have for funds that come just for local roads, the kind of roads we live on every day, there's really been dwindling resources. And usually when folks ask me a question, I have a standard answer, sorry, you live in California. There's a lot of funds that have not quite made it to a local level over a lot of years. That's what we hear talking about, sales tax funds and also the gas tax money. That you would think that would be enough to cover for the road repairs. It's been diverted at the state level over the years. There's a lot of arguments and discussions. You hear about that in the news. But this is local money that we decided as a community to go ahead and collect. And people were concerned, and yet I feel very good that we've kept our promise, and we owe a lot of thanks to our Citizen Oversight Committee to kind of give that assurance to the public. These are just members of the public representing different organizations to kind of look over staff's shoulder and make sure we're doing exactly what we said we would do. And what I like about this is sometimes on the faraway money, I call it state and federal, it can be very political. It's very likely LA or San Francisco is going to get more money, even per capita. It's just not going to make it through the politics for an area like ours. And that includes the whole county. But this, the council does not make a decision on what road ought to be repaired. It's very scientific. The priority is really based on engineering. Every road is assessed in terms of what it would take to repair it or if it completely needs to be rebuilt. And then you apply cost-benefit analysis that, yeah, if it's really very bad, it's just not cost-effective to deal with it. That's where the only time you would have any input that might change the engineer's view on this is the police chief, fire chief. There's safety issues involved, but councils know we don't really have much say other than we all have vowed to keep that promise, to keep this a process that is really fair and transparent. And I think we can, as a community, be very proud with what staff has accomplished. With that, I'm going to open it up to the public. And again, I would invite our two members that are here, Carol and Scott, if you'd like to say anything. Thank you for being here as part of that nine-member committee. Welcome. And again, state your name just for the record. And
Carol Simonin.
Ooh, wow. We have a very involved committee. I know more about roads than I ever thought I'd know, nor wanted to know. And the committee is very involved, and they ask a lot of good questions. I've been on the committee for 2 years now. I think it's 2 years. Two more to go. But it's really a good experience, and the director does an excellent job running the meetings, as well as the city clerk and city manager and city clerks. That's it.
Well, thank you, and thank you for your service. Welcome.
Good evening, Scott Burgess. Thank you for your appointment to the committee. I've just been on for a year. I only had two meetings so far, so I'm still learning. But I'm very impressed with the process and with the staff work. And it's nice to see projects done. And to the council, given that not only it was a sales tax increase, but it was also a commitment that it went to this kind of project. And I think the only other thing to be noted is there's a lot more to be done. This money is specific, but I don't know if it's in the actual citizen report. I can't remember anymore. But the price tag to really fix all the roads is quite large.
Yes.
And yes, it's a political process. It can be a P, politics with a small p too, and that is voting. We lost quite a bit of money with the measure. I can't remember what it was called, the self-help movement. We lost by just a few votes, which would have brought more money in. We did get some more state funds. But in addition to the roads that are falling apart, we could take that money and probably pick a couple of the roads that would take it all. So I think we're spending it very efficiently. And, of course, there are lots of roads in the city that we don't maintain that people probably wonder why we aren't spending it on those as well. But anyway, I think it's a great project, good staff, and thank you for the council.
Well, thank you, and thank you for your service. Any member of the public wishing to speak on this item, this would be the time. Seeing none approach, we'll close public comment on the annual road report, and thank you, staff, our city engineer, for your work on this at Public Works.
I actually, Director Engel does the majority of the report, so I just presented it. She did the lion's share of it.
Well, she's just so quiet and efficient over there. We do forget that the foundation is the finances, and this is very finance-driven, so thank you. We do require a motion on this.
I move staff's recommendation.
Second.
We have a motion by Mayor Pro Tem Fonzie, seconded by Councilmember Sturtevant. Roll call, please.
Councilmember Sturtevant?
Yes.
Councilmember Burba?
Yes.
Councilmember Moreno?
Yes, ma'am.
Mayor Pro Tem Fonzie?
Yes.
Mayor O'Malley?
Yes.
Motion passes 5-0.
Thank you. Next agenda item is Management Report C2. Implement policy to amend the calculation of the annual escalation factor of the Community Facilities District 2005-1. So this will require some background information and then what's before us tonight. And I believe Director Jerry Rangel is going to be making this because it's also very fiscally technical. So welcome.
Thank you very much, Mayor and Council. I'm very pleased to present this report to you tonight. It's another good news item after our last good news item of getting some of those roads paved. So this one is in regard to the Community Facilities District. So just to give you a little background, as you were saying, on the Community Facilities District, we also call it the CFD for short because that's quite a mouthful. It was adopted and put into place back in 2005. The idea of the CFD really started many years before that in the update of the general plan and its associated policies. The city's general plan has Section 2 is on the land use and open space and conservation element. Of that section, Goal 15 is really focused on providing adequate public services for sensible growth. There are about 10 policies that support Goal 15 in our general plan, and Policy 15.3 reads, as you see up there, ensure that adequate services, service capacity, and facilities exist prior to approving new development. Around this time, several large residential developments were being considered by council to be have approval. The 2005 council had kind of some decision points at that point. They could allow the development of the new homes without the CFD, which would shift the cost to the existing homeowners or the existing residents throughout the city. They could deny the development and not allow it to be built, or they could implement the CFD to offset the cost to and allow the development. Of course, we know now in 2018 that they did implement the CFD and allow those developments to be built. David Tosick and Associates was hired to perform a very in-depth study to kind of model what we thought would be the cost for each residential unit. What was the draw or donation to the city, or kind of the benefit cost analysis? At that time, the study came out to show that each residential unit on average cost the city about $440 per year. In those are, you know, calculating all of the different taxes you pay and services you draw on, the balance ended right there about $440 a year. So by putting the CFD in place and having each of these residential units pay that amount each year, the net effect on the city was zero. So that the council felt at that time they were in compliance with the general fund or the general plan and really supporting the policy of development paying for itself. This is an ongoing service, of course. It's paying for our employees, police service, fire service, park services. So this is an ongoing fee to the CFD. It doesn't terminate at some point. It goes on because the costs of service do go on. The amount of the CFD is subject to an adjustment factor to keep up with inflation and to preserve purchasing power. Obviously, $440 today doesn't buy as much as it did back in 2005. Without such an escalator, services would erode over time, and due to the increasing costs of providing those services. While the CFD escalator is greater than the 2% that we see with Prop 13, there is no reset provision like Prop 13 has when a person sells their house and it's reevaluated. The rate and method of apportionment that's part of the CFD indicates that the staff should use the calculation of either the greater of 5% or CPI to adjust the annual maximum tax calculation. And the maximum tax calculation, it is really what it sounds like. It's the maximum amount that can be charged. It doesn't necessarily correspond to the actual tax that is charged. So the current fee right now is $648. The max tax is higher than that. The use of CFDs, of course, is it's not just in Atascadero. It's really used throughout the state. It's a common mechanism, and its purpose is only to recover costs. It's not to provide the city more funding than we need to do things. So the benefit of having the escalation factor, too, is that we kind of keep pace with the costs that, as our costs are rising, those costs are rising, to be able to recover and come out even at the end of the day. Staff and the Finance Committee have heard a number of concerns from several of the district residents. They expressed concerns related to the calculation of the maximum tax and some of the other issues. Among these concerns were that the developers, not the homeowners, voted to be in the CFD. Not every housing unit is included throughout the city. deed-restricted affordable units are exempt. Maximum tax calculations allow greater than 2% increases than the Prop 13 2%, and the CFD fee does not reduce or sunset. So in order to kind of address those, staff worked with the residents and the Finance Committee to kind of see if we can come to some middle ground. It is important to note that the residents did indicate that they felt that it was very important to keep up with police and fire and park services for this. They recognized the value of those services and were willing to kind of come to the table to try to discuss this and find solutions. So the residents did come up with some brainstorming items that they brought to staff and finance committee. And these items were to annex all new homes into the CFD, to annex existing homes into the CFD for those homes that make renovations and maybe add a bedroom or a bathroom, to not exempt any of the deed-restricted affordable units, to cap the percentage increase for the CFD fee, to annex all of to increase the CFD fee upon the sale of the property, kind of like the Prop 13 does the reset, or to reduce or eliminate the fee, or to limit the CFD fee to a set period of years per home. Some of these items were kind of logistically problematic. We evaluated each idea to kind of see how feasible it is. But some of them are logistically problematic, meaning really either we couldn't get to it, somehow there was not enough information, or the city wasn't notified about certain pieces of information that would trigger the beginning of the CFD, or somehow they would be potentially implemented in an unfair, inconsistent way because we didn't have enough information at the time. So either logistically prohibitive or complicated, I guess we could say. Other ideas were administratively prohibitive. They would, yes, they could be done, but they would cause a lot of staff time. And given council's focus on trying to streamline administrative processes, these ideas were not really felt as they were the ideal solutions either. Other ideas, such as limiting the time that a home pays into the CFD or sunsetting it at some point, would reduce the CFD revenue and would not be congruent with the original intent of the CFD, the general plans, and the policies. And this would require significant general fund contributions over time. Finally, some of these ideas would require legal changes to the CFD, and this would trigger a two-thirds vote of all registered voters. This is kind of a heavy lift, both resource-wise in cash and in staff time. The calculation of the annual escalation factor seemed to be of pretty high importance to the residents we heard from, and that's one that could be addressed by a council policy. Staff proposed and the Finance Committee recommended that the council consider a policy that would change the way the maximum tax is calculated. So this internal policy essentially would change how we calculate the number to limit the increase amount, but doesn't actually change the rate and method of apportionment in the CFD, so no vote would be triggered. So it's kind of just one more additional internal policy that we would, kind of adopt as administratively. The intent of the new policy to provide the residents some assurance on how the annual CFD max would grow and would be limited. Currently, the max tax is the increase is calculated as the increase of the greater of 5% or CPI for the San Francisco, Oakland, San Jose area. The new policy would also then factor in a year-over-year percentage change in the cost of a Step C police officer. So this is one more addition to what the current calculation is. We did get some feedback this afternoon from one of the residents that indicated that it might be more helpful to add some additional language to that bottom bullet item you see in red and underlined to make it more clear. So effectively, we would determine the greater of 5% or CPI and then calculate the cost of a year-over-year increase of a Step C police officer and then take the lesser of those two bullet items. So it doesn't change the intent of what we indicated in the resolution, just clarifies the language. So we appreciate that input, and we do think it does clarify that language even further. This is an example of how the process would work. So assuming CPI is 2.5%, and the year-over-year change in the officer's costs is 1.6%, we would A, take the greater of 5% or CPI, which of course is 5%. B, we would calculate the year-over-year change in the officer cost. And in this example, it's 1.6%. And then C, we would take the lesser of items A or B above, and then we would get the 1.6. So the annual increase for that year would be 1.6. So without this new policy, it would have been 5%. So it adds an additional layer on to how we limit the calculation. Again, the recommendation for this change is to adhere to the original intent of the CFD, yet provide some additional insurance for concerned residents on how the fee is calculated. And that concludes my report, and I'd be happy to address any questions that you have.
Thank you. And let's begin with just questions from council, and then we'll be seeking input from the Finance Committee and working our way through anyone that might have something to say, and then working to public comment. But first, just council questions for staff. Go ahead.
We got the CPI from the San Francisco Bay Area. Why was that a local CPI?
This, originally when we formed the CFD, we did use a consultant to form that. It's harder to find an area CPI, I think, for our area because we're so small. We generally get either the Los Angeles or San Francisco area. I think they felt that that was more relevant to our kind of costs and things, costs of living and things like that at the time. So we've just consistently used that CPI.
So it's something we've done consistently from the beginning?
Yes, and I believe it is included in the rate and method of apportionment as well. So,
okay, and then moving over to why the Step C for the police officer?
We wanted to get something that was kind of middle ground. So we're not taking a Step A officer or a Step E officer. We're taking kind of just the middle ground officer as kind of a base to kind of judge from each year to each year. So we're doing Step C officer to Step C officer. So had we hired a new person, we would hire them at A, and they would eventually move to E. Step C seemed the most reasonable to be able to compare year to year on.
Thank you.
Councilmember Barbeau, did you?
Yes. The example you used, of course, reflected 1.6% for a year-over-year increase in police officer costs, and the police officer costs kind of being a proxy for the city's increase in expenses to provide these services. What is the, if you have it, what is the actual percentage that would be applied this year? Do you have that calculated?
I don't have that calculated at this time.
Okay. My only concern was that given the, it specifies also that this is a tier one PERS, meaning a police officer on the salary, Step C, who's getting tier one PERS benefits. And of course, those costs have gone up very rapidly in the last years. And so I was kind of assuming it might be higher than 1.6%. It would affect the overall cost and create a greater number than 1.6%.
Yes, it could be higher than 1.6. You're absolutely right. But in no case would this go, it's the first step on that example was the greater of CPI or 5%. We haven't seen a CPI over 5% in a very long time. So
right.
So I suspect it's not going to increase more than 5%. And again, this is the maximum tax. This is not the actual levy fee that's being calculated. So...
Right. I just want to make sure everybody understood that was just an example. That's not the calculated increase for this year. All right. Thank you.
Other council questions? Thank you. And did the city manager have anything to add to that?
No, I think that covered it.
Very good. I would invite, this was reviewed by our finance committee. We have two excellent members on that finance committee, Ms. Heather Moreno, CPA, and also Mr. Charles Barbeau, who was former finance director with City of San Luis Obispo. I can't think of two better folks to be on the finance committee along with our city treasurer and staff. So I just welcome if you would like to add any input. Not required, but if you'd like to, this would be the time.
It's been a lengthy, not lengthy, but there's been some citizen involvement, and obviously it's an area of concern for them because this is an additional levy on their property tax, and so they're right to bring forward those concerns. And I think in doing this, we're trying to be reasonable and accommodate those concerns while ensuring we cover and protect the city's interest and the city's ability to provide services.
Thank you.
Yes, and Mr. Seebach was part of that conversation as well, and so we had looked at all those different options, and as the director said, just there aren't a lot of reasonable options that are logistically and administratively possible. But as you do see, the current levy compared to the maximum, it could be 20% higher, so the city has tried to keep it at a lower level to be easier on residents while still covering costs. But there is that, that again, it could be 20% higher and it isn't. So I think it is what we have discovered is probably the best option to suit everyone. Not ideal, but this whole situation isn't necessarily ideal.
Thank you. Other council comments or questions? And I would just add in another perspective, not that I don't think it's so critical, but there might be folks listening in. It's kind of a complex topic. I look at it a little bit historically. I think, who was around here in 2005? So I'm the only one up here you can blame for any of this. I was actually here on the council when we heard the TOSIC study and deliberated on this issue. And I kind of think about the history. I kind of like being a collector of local history. I have a picture, original ad by E.G. Lewis back in 1913 or so. It has a picture of some of the original homes around Atascadero, and it says, these homes worth $500,000, and they were talking about all those homes, $500,000. Now they're over $500,000 apiece. And so the issue was, is those homes were built in a very tight circle right around this building. And for the fire department to get to those houses, you could just about push it there, Chief. And so the response time was very good and not very costly. I mean, my dad was one of the first firemen in town. They only had three full-time firefighters, and they took turns covering the station. And so cost structure was different. And what happens over time is you start moving out. Now, in a city like San Luis, everything is flat in a grid. You can kind of keep expanding, and it doesn't change much on costs. But in a city like Atascadero, the farther you move out, you start experiencing what economists call the difference between marginal cost and average cost. If we double the housing and they're all close to downtown, you could average the cost out and it's going to come out about the same for the new resident. But the marginal cost of, well, like my house up on Portola on top of a hill, you've got to have pumping stations to pump the water there. You've got roads that now consider, we have got some of the largest road network in the state of California. We've got a lot of additional costs that are represented by building farther out, and we've prided ourselves on having really one of the largest average lot size at one time in the nation. So that makes a difference than when you look at average cost versus marginal cost. And what was happening over time is, of course, as we started trying to maintain the same service level for each new person that moved to town, we found out that that marginal cost for that next unit of service was a lot higher than the previous. And that's where it got to be a problem, that if you simply said, well, whatever it costs back in a long time ago, whatever that cost is, let's figure out what the average cost is, let's charge the new person that amount. What that meant is we're actually decreasing service for existing residents. And some folks, well, that's not fair. And also it started interfering with costs, because one thing about having a great fire department like we do, it actually keeps all of our insurance rates down, because cost factor is response time, pressure of water out farther away, all those kind of things. So I just threw out some of that thinking that went in, that what we want to do is make sure we want to accommodate more folks wanting to move to the great place we live, but to be fair, we want to try to maintain the service level, not improve, not make it fancier, but just have the same level of service for each new resident. And unfortunately, if you live out in 3F Meadows, that next unit of service costs a lot more than if you lived right downtown and your house was built in 1913. So that's part of where some of the study came into, and you know, you could look at it all different ways, you know, and but those are some of the things that people have thought about over the years. So here we are looking at this again. I think you really looked at this creatively to try to be as fair as we can to everybody. And with that, I'm going to open it up. If there's any follow-up council has, want to reprimand me for back in 2005 or anything, this would be the time. Other than that, we'll open it up to the public of here we are considering a way to maybe make this fairer, if possible. Welcome.
Vicki Fogelman, I live on Reggio Place, and I am in one of your CFD districts. And we probably would have had more folks here tonight, but we got kind of a late notice on this today. So having said that, we don't disagree with what staff has come up with. And I want to start by thanking first, I want to thank some personal stuff that I had with staff. I had Katie Bannister from Planning and Ryan Hayes from Public Works, who I've worked with now a couple of times on some road and some sign issues, and both are amazing staff people. You are very lucky to have them.
Thank you.
Also with Rochelle and also with Jerry. They've also been extremely helpful, and they've really worked hard trying to help us find some middle ground with this. Having said all that, thank you for the proposed language change. It was me who called and asked about that today. And I just wanted it to be clear that it's not A, B, and then you do C. So, and that's kind of the way it looked to me. So I support that, and I support the change, and I appreciate you working with us as always. But I am going to continue to make my argument that there needs to be a change in how this is reviewed or how long we pay for this fee. And I'm not suggesting, I am suggesting a sunset, but over and above that, if we can't sunset it, let's fix it at some point. Pick a time, pick 10 years, pick 15 years, whatever you need, but start fixing it. And then when the new folks come in and new developments, they're going to start at wherever we ended. So they're gonna, that rate's going to keep going up, but some of us, it's going to keep getting higher, and we appreciate the fact that it hasn't changed much or at all in the last couple of years, and that's been helpful. But I started out at 440, and I'm up at the 670, whatever it is now. So I'm up to that amount, and now I'm not a full-time employee. I'm a full-time retired employee, so my income changed as well. And I just think that it would be a fairer thing to look at the possibility of fixing that rate at a certain time. And I'm going to keep making that argument every time this comes to the board, your council. I appreciate everything you do for us. I appreciate the city. I love it. I've lived here from 1985. I'm one of those people who didn't move into a new development from another area. I moved from point A to point B to Atascadero. And there are a lot of us that did that. So we're not all new people. And I'm a huge supporter of law enforcement, always have been, always will be. I'm also a huge supporter of fire. They do the great thing. They, un- They seem to be on our street a lot lately. I think we're all getting older. So, you know, we seem to see them more often on our street, which they haven't stopped at my house yet, though. So having said that, I appreciate where we are tonight, and I still think we need to look at this a little bit further and look at the possibility. And like Jerry said, we don't, you know, affordable housing doesn't pay this fee. They need fire and police just as much as we do, but they're not paying this fee. Now, I know there's a few who chose to pay it, but as a rule, they don't pay the fee. So, you know, that's not right either. There is some real unfairness, and I'll shut up now. Thank you.
Well, that's all right. And if we do want you to make sure you can share anything you have to say. So let me see if does anyone else would like to speak on this topic. And I do want to make sure you, if you need more time, we can... You know what it's like. Yes. Yes. Well, I won't compare us to the Board of Supervisors. Well, we will close public comment, bring it back, and I would add, too, that this is just a cost issue. We also understand there's a revenue side, and I can guarantee you the council saw this as we're in a boat that's leaking. Let's plug the hole. Meanwhile, the top priority of this council is focusing on new revenue. And if you have new revenue, there's lots of, you won't get into economic development and all the complexities there, but the fact is that's our way out for our community. We have to focus on economic development, and this council has always made that its top priority. We have to remind the police and fire chief, who we would love to say, you know, police and fire is our top priority. A few years back, we said, you know, actually economic development's our top priority, but they understand the reason is to get that next incremental fire truck we need, we have to have money coming in from sales tax, transient occupancy tax, those other sources. So this is not the only thing we're working on, so thank you. With that, is any other council comment, or we can move on for motion? Councilwoman Moreno.
It's just a small thing, Director, but on the A, B, that wording, the bullets are not labeled A and B. So to say A and B above, like we're sitting here looking at it, assuming that, but, oh, did you change that? No, that's not it. Oh, you did.
I believe in the resolution.
It was bullet points before.
Yes, sorry, my presentation.
Oh, in the resolution.
Like
okay,
in the
got
resolution, it.
It
does say A, B, and C.
Very
and
good.
And so, if you are considering moving staff's recommendation, I would hope that you would consider this language as well.
Yes, and I am ready to make a motion if there is no one.
No, I think that'd be appropriate.
All right,
as Chair of Finance.
I will move staff's recommendation to adopt the draft resolution implementing the policy to amend the calculation of the annual escalation factor for the Community Facilities District 2005-1 as revised.
I'll second.
We have a motion by Councilman Moreno, seconded by Councilmember Barbeau. Roll call, please.
Councilmember Moreno?
Yes, ma'am.
Councilmember Barbeau?
Yes.
Councilmember Sturdivant?
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem Fonzie?
Yes.
Mayor O'Malley?
Yes.
Motion passes 5-0.
Thank you. We'll move on then to council announcements and reports. And again, I will go ahead and merge the two and let council members speak on anything they would like to, including the committees they sit on. And I just soon start from my left and work to my right if Councilmember Barbeau has anything.
No, with the holidays, I have nothing to report.
Excellent.
Ditto and a happy new year.
Okay, we're moving right along. Councilman Fonzie.
Well, unfortunately, I did have a meeting of the Atascadero Basin Groundwater Sustainability Agency last week, and the board is looking to find money that the state has set aside for water management and to do a groundwater sustainability plan, hopefully with the help of some of that state money that will be needed to put the report in place to protect Atascadero's groundwater from others. So I'll keep you posted.
Thank you, Councilman Sturdivant.
Yes, no report, and Happy New Year.
Except you are doing some work next week.
I am doing some work. That's right. The mayor, myself, and the city manager will be attending a conference, a League of California Cities conference in Sacramento next week. So that will be interesting to be able to see Jordan and Bill Monning and get to network with other cities and get to learn some things that we can bring back and help our city be better and stronger.
Yes, thank you. With that, I'm going to kind of skim the surface of a couple of committees I participate on. They kind of cross a few boundaries. It was also one of the topics at our countywide mayor's meeting just last week, an issue we'll be addressing up in Sacramento. Some of you may or may not be aware of, but the ABC, alcohol, what are there? It's alcohol beverage control.
That is it.
And they are really controlling beverages right now. We've had some problems with some of our local businesses that would normally, you're in San Luis, you've got mixed use, you've got apartments right next to a retail area. For some reason, they've kind of forgot that in San Luis and looked in a Tascadero. Well, you got residential apartments close to some of our fun places people are hanging out these days, and having some differential enforcement in our area about some timing and stuff. We think that's not quite fair, not going with the letter of the law. And so we have talked with our assembly person. We are hoping to meet directly with folks in Sacramento, try to work out some of those things. But that is really what we do a lot of behind the scenes when our business community has an issue. A priority for our council and for staff is to kind of work between multiple agencies that have a lot of different views on things, and we try to help with that. And I think we're going to make some headway, but that'll be one of the things we'll be talking about up there. Also, I was at our countywide mayor's meeting, two other topics came up. One, a lot to do with the fires. This is a new era, isn't it, Chief? It's like we're experiencing a couple of fires in the state that are unlike anything folks have prophesied, predicted, or planned for. And it's taking a whole nother level of approach. And I would like, Chief, I'm going to put you on the spot tonight, but I know the chiefs countywide are really looking at a lot of things, maybe a little more attention to that. What are those things like ready, set, go kinds of things? Some little information that really has to be updated for our community, and I think it could have some effects on planning. We may need to do things that we a little more critically pay attention to that help plan for survival if you're really in those kind of situations, because we are in a rural area with lots of trees that are stressed after droughts. So, Chief, I kind of look to you to, I think we should review our emergency planning and what we should be doing to work with our, I think we can have a little discussion on this, maybe it's strategic planning, and see, do we need to, does the council need to do anything different? I think we want to be tuned into that. Another thing that was brought up is the change in the federal government's view of marijuana, because even though we've said, hey, it's fine in California, federal government has taken a kind of a look the other way, and they're doing less of that these days, and don't know what that means. Our city attorney is kind of will be addressing that, and so just like the county, each city is going to be looking at this. This is slightly a different wrinkle, but it's a little too new yet for us to look at, but I think our council very much wants to follow the between the two letters of the law. What's the pathway that works best for our community? And we're very open to what our community wants to see happen. A couple other committees I would point out, we're very lucky. I am pleased to say this is the best city council in the county. I love being on this city council. What a lot of folks don't realize is how hardworking everybody up here is. Sure, I work hard, but so does everybody else. In the history of Atascadero, we haven't had council members that have put the time in, like somebody like Councilwoman Fonzie, to be chair of the water district, to be chair of APCD, to be chair of LAFCO. These are big responsibilities and a lot of knowledge. With Heather representing us on the Economic Vitality Corporation, and working with our business community about bringing in some things that are very innovative. You know, this is a big time commitment, way beyond. I remember a council member running for council one time saying, I could give up every other Tuesday night to be on city council. And I did chuckle a bit because we put in a lot more time, and it really has benefited our community. I was just selected as president for a second time for San Luis Council of Governments, and you know, that's a big responsibility. I'm excited to be there for the 50th anniversary of SLOCOG, but we are looking at not only funding issues, we're looking at transportation issues, and some of the things I'm excited about on transportation side is integrating with all of the private sector transportation systems as well as our public sector. How do we interface those together? I've asked our staff to let's put a little more effort, maybe even a summit of getting folks together. I don't care if it's Uber, the various tourism-oriented systems. How do we integrate together and remove any barriers for a seamless system? Along those lines, I met with our own seniors center right here in town today, and SLOCOG is meeting with seniors groups, two, one in Templeton and one in Paso tomorrow around the county. Are we doing everything we can for seniors, and are their needs being met? And there are a few interesting things that came up I didn't think about, but we'll go into more detail in the future. But we can do better, I think, for our seniors, and we're all getting there. So I think these are just some of the things we want to take a look at a little bit more. I wasn't looking at you, Heather. I was looking at Charles. Not you, Heather. Charles. Yes. Charles and I are getting there. Well, that's probably a good segue for me to quit on right there, I can see. So any other... Did you have... Oh, I stimulated a thought. Go ahead.
Actually, it wasn't you. I was just thinking about council announcements. I keep seeing the farmer's market come up here, and when I talk to residents, they often don't realize that during the winter, the farmer's market is still going on. Yes, every Wednesday, 3 to 5, Sunken Gardens. You can get soup. You can get sourdough bread. You can get olive oil, honey, granola, tea, fruits, vegetables, nuts. It's amazing. Make sure you get out there, support our local farmers market. It's a good time and great food.
Very good. Other staff announcements or anything? Well, then we can adjourn our city council meeting, and we will then take up the successor agency. And so I will call that meeting to order, and we'll begin with a roll call.
Councilmember Robo?
Here.
Councilmember Moreno?
Here.
Councilmember Sturtevant?
Here.
Mayor Pro Tem Fonzie?
Here.
And Mayor O'Malley?
Here.
All present.
Thank you. And the first item is approval of the agenda, and again, we are going to move item C1 up just ahead of item B1. The reason is board member Fonzie will need to step down on the B1 item, and she'll describe what that is when we come to it, and will be participating in an area she is more familiar than probably the rest of us. And with that, then, I would entertain a motion to approve the agenda as modified.
So moved.
Second.
We have a motion by Councilmember Sturtevant, seconded by Councilwoman Fonzie. Roll call, please.
Councilmember Sturtevant?
Yes.
Councilmember Burbo?
Yes.
Councilmember Moreno?
Yes, ma'am.
Mayor Pro Tem Fonzie?
Yes.
Mayor O'Malley?
Yes.
Motion passes 5-0.
And we do have a consent calendar. I want to check with the city clerk. Are we going ahead with that, or we need to make some modifications?
We do need to remove the minutes for November 14th. A revised copy has been provided to all of you, and it's in the public review book, but there does need to be a revision made to those minutes.
Okay, so we will not really have it on the consent calendar.
No.
So we'll go ahead and take on that item, and let's have staff present the proposed changes on the minutes.
Sure. The minutes just need to be revised. The ones that were put in there had an old roll call on it, and Mayor Pro Tem Fonzie was actually absent from that meeting due to what you had described earlier, the potential conflict of interest. And so she was absent, and the revised minutes just reflect her absence and that her absence was due to the potential conflict of interest.
Okay, so very good.
We need to approve the minutes of all the other meetings first and then approve this as a separate item?
Yes.
Okay, so
separate right. Motions.
So, I mean, I'll move approval of the consent calendar minus the minutes of November 14th.
Well, let me just check in with, is there any member of the public wishing to comment on any of these consent calendar items or minutes? Seeing none approach, we have a motion on all items not needing modification by Councilmember Sturtevant, and the second was by Councilwoman Moreno. Roll call, please.
So I think the motion was by Councilmember Bourbeau and then Moreno, correct?
Yes.
Okay. So
did I foul it up again?
That's okay.
I'm glad you're here.
Even, though.
Go ahead. Roll
Council
call.
Councilmember Bourbeau?
Yes.
Councilmember Moreno?
Yes, ma'am.
Councilmember Sturtevant?
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem Fonzie?
Yes.
Mayor O'Malley?
Yes.
Okay, motion passes on consent 5-0.
Well, that's why I'm not going to make the motion. Who would like to make the mix?
I'll separately move approval of the November 14th minutes.
And I will second that.
Okay, thank you for keeping it easy for me. Councilmember Bourbeau makes the motion. Councilmember Moreno. Roll call, please.
Councilmember Bourbeau?
Yes.
Councilmember Moreno?
Yes, ma'am.
Councilmember Sturtevant?
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem Fonzie?
Yes.
Mayor O'Malley?
Yes.
Thank you. Motion passes 5-0.
Next item is community forum for any of you to speak to all of us as this board on any topic that's not on the agenda, but it's under our jurisdiction. Anyone wish to approach? Seeing none approach, we will close the community forum and we will move on to the public hearings. And again, we are moving to item C1 first, and Ms. Jerry Rangel is making the presentation.
Thank you very much, Chair Member. Sorry, Chairperson O'Malley and Board. So we will be pretty brief with this tonight. This is the annual ROPS approval that we come to you each January with. The ROPS is due in February. So this report will be regarding the revised ROPS that you have recently received at your desk there. So we had to add one item kind of last minute from after speaking with the Department of Finance. So I'll address that in just a moment. This does cover 1 year of obligations from July 1st, 2018 through June 30th, 2019. So just really looking ahead there. This ROPS estimates that $1,978,615 in Redevelopment Property Tax Trust Fund, or RPTTF is what we call it for short, funding will be necessary for the next 1 year period. The majority of this will be used to make bond payments, but also includes some funding for administrative allowance and maintenance and sales of the Creekside building. If you'll recall, the old chamber building that was across from Sunken Gardens, that was an asset of the successor agency, and it was on the long-range property management plan to be demolished because the city owns the land and we couldn't move it because it was not stable enough. So the demolition of that building was included in the 16-17 ROPS, and when we submitted the ROPS to the Department of Finance, it had an estimate of $20,000 to demolish the building. At that time, we only had the estimate from the vendor was $10,750, but we knew there was some other potential costs, including potential asbestos abatement and those kinds of things. So we did finish that project. It was completed in fiscal year 16-17. However, only 10,750 of it was authorized by the Department of Finance, and it did cost $3,952 more than that. So we have included that on this 18-19 ROPS. Not that we'll be spending it in this period, but because we had spent it in a prior period, but this is kind of the formalization of the approval process for that piece of funding. So that was the last amount that was added to this current ROPS that you're holding, and that was in conversation with the Department of Finance and how do you want this to be seen on the ROPS. So that's how that goes. If the board approves this ROPS tonight, it will go to the Oversight Board on Thursday for their consideration, and then it will be forwarded on to the county and the state after that. It will be posted on the website as well. And that concludes my report, and I would be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you. Any council questions?
Just for clarity to the public, could you explain what ROPS is?
Sure. Sorry. It's the required obligation payment schedule. So each year, because when redevelopment was demolished or dissolved. Sorry, you got that demolished.
We can live with that. We can go with that.
Dissolved in 2012, successor agencies were put in place to kind of finish out their redevelopment agency's business, and which is what you are here, the board for that agency. So the requirement through the law now is that all of the expenditures that we plan to expend for the successor agency for that fiscal year come to you tonight for this approval, then it goes to the Oversight Board and the Finance Committee and others to approve. So that is the required obligation payment schedule that we're discussing.
And also, just to make sure people get a picture here, that the biggest payments that are authorized under this are to make bond payments for bonds the city issued in 2004 and 5 and 2010. Primarily to redo this building, but for a few other things as well. That's really the biggest bulk of the money we're talking about here, correct?
Yes, thank you for that clarification. There are small amounts of money, $60,000-ish in RPTTF for this period that would go toward like the CC&Rs for the Creekside building, maintenance of the Creekside building, kind of if a window gets broken or something like that, and for the cost of the sales process and things like that. So there is a small amount, but you are right, the bulk of this goes toward bond payments.
Thank you.
Thank you. Other questions? And unfortunately, this topic, the more you touch it, the more complicated it becomes. And so just for, again, for the public's sake, if anyone is sitting out there, because you can hear a few words that would scare me, like, because normally we don't get into borrowing money. We pay as we go. We don't borrow money to do things and then hope it works out in the future. And there's a few things like that that's different about how redevelopment was structured. And this goes back where it used to be when you would have an improvement. Now look at the Carlton Hotel as an example. That was one of the first projects we did. It was on the property roll books. The tax value is $650,000, $850,000, something like that. And when it was rebuilt, it's on the books for $12 million assessed value. That's a lot more property tax coming in. That's an increment in property tax. Now, if we only got 16% of the property tax, which you'd normally get as a city, that's still pretty good, but not a lot. When we had redevelopment, we had the incentive as a city, and every city in California had this, we could help incentivize a business to make improvements like that, and we could keep a disproportionate amount of that increase in value for a certain period of time, and we could use that to invest in the downtown. We did a lot of things in that period of time. Governor Brown forgets that's how they did Jack London Square. And we did a lot of things like that. But the reason I say he forgot, because he's the reason we don't have it anymore, kind of did away with that, took all the money to the state level, if you can believe that. But while it existed, we had a guaranteed increased cash flow. And, of course, the complexity of the state is you couldn't just spend it. You had to borrow against that income source and then get funds to invest in and do incentives. And we did a lot of things around town that were really helped us be where we are today, but that went away a while back. But the state did have to, because of court cases, say, well, you just can't take away money at a local level where you've required them to borrow money to make these improvements against a guaranteed cash flow. You can't just take the money away, which is probably surprised the state. But anyway, that's why we are where we are today, is we still have those bonds that are being paid off by this guaranteed income source. And instead of just a council serving as the redevelopment agency, we now have buku numbers of various levels of bureaucracy that review every decision. And that's why we are here tonight. And none of this makes sense to the average person. But we're not going into debt as a city. This is a kind of a leftover residual of how the state did something once upon a time. So I just had to say that. Thank you for indulging me. And here we are kind of resolving this situation. I think all we need to do, is any member of the public wishing to comment on this item? In case I didn't do that once already, and seeing no one approach, we could now move to approve this recommendation.
I move that we approve staff's recommendation.
Second.
A motion by Mayor Pro Tem Fonzie, seconded by Councilwoman Moreno. Roll call, please.
Councilmember Moreno?
Yes, ma'am.
Councilmember Burbo?
Yes.
Councilmember Sturdivant?
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem Fonzie?
Yes.
Mayor O'Malley?
Yes.
Motion passes 5-0.
Thank you. Next, we're moving on to B1, the most interesting thing on the agenda tonight. And Councilman Fonzie?
Thank you. I need to recuse myself because I am employee of a company that is making the representation for the applicant for real estate services. So I had a question for the city attorney. Do I need to actually leave the room or may I stay in the audience?
Well, the rule is that if you've got a personal interest that you want to express, you can stay in the room and express that. But if you don't, then you would need to leave the room. And since this is the last item on the agenda, I don't know that you would need to stay in the building unless you want to. But I guess that's really up to...
Well, of course, I'm curious how it comes out, but I can find that out later.
So. Yeah, I'm sure you'll hear about it.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you. And you are excused. And again, this is an item presented by our city manager, Rochelle. Go ahead.
Thank you, Chairperson O'Malley and board members. As Chairperson O'Malley said, the item before you is the proposed sale of the Creekside building. That is the building that is over in Colony Square, right across the creek here from City Hall. It was used as our temporary City Hall from 2005 to 2013. The Creekside building was purchased by the Redevelopment Agency in 2004 as part of a five-year implementation plan for economic development and redevelopment here in the downtown. As we just talked about, redevelopment agencies were dissolved by the state in 2011-2012, and we were required to do a long-range property management plan as part of that dissolution. The state put a lot of requirements, a lot of rules and regulations on how you dissolve redevelopment agencies, and one of those was we had to list every property that we had that the redevelopment agency had and what we were going to do with it. There were very strict rules on what you could and could not do with that property. For the most part, if it was a saleable property that was not for a bona fide public purpose, such as a street, a road, a parking lot, there's actually a whole litany of things that it could be that you were pretty much required to say how you would sell them. The successor agency had their long-range property. The Creekside building was, we did tell the state that we would be putting the Creekside building up for sale as part of that long-range property management plan, and that long-range property management plan was approved in 2013 by the successor agency, the oversight board, and eventually the Department of Finance. After we received and got all of our approvals and everything done for the long-range property management plan, the successor agency hired a company to come do a study of what potential development options were out there for that building. As part of the long-range property management plan, we said that we wanted to not only just sell the property. We wanted to sell the property in a way that would spur economic development and get that higher property tax that the chairperson was talking about. We wanted the new tenants to spur continued development of Colony Square. As we went through that, they looked at the property. They looked at some of the challenges with the property along with some of the advantages of the property and came up with a few scenarios. From there, it was decided that we would do an RFQ process for a qualified real estate broker, and there was a lot of discussion on trying to incentivize or figure out a way that we could legally try and get the types of uses that we had. While we were going through the process and getting the RFQ finalized, we were approached by Pacific Management Development Corporation in June of 2016, who said that they were interested in purchasing the property. After some starts and stops, those negotiations did stall. And in November of 2017, we were approached by what eventually became Colony Creekside LLC to purchase the property. They offered a $2.2 million sales price, and so the purchase agreement that you have before you is an agreement with Colony Creekside LLC. As we've discussed in closed session during these negotiations before tonight, we did get to receive an updated broker opinion of value. The broker opinion of value did place the value at between $2.1 and $2.2 million. So this is at the higher end range of that value. The city did not have to hire a broker or have a little marketing or sales cost. So that will save a substantial amount on the cost of selling this. And I apologize, I say the city, it's really the successor agency. We did put some restrictions, and those are outlined in the sale agreement on the property. So there are some restrictions and some other things by zoning, but because we want to make sure that this spurs the type of uses, we did add some other restrictions to that. No health care or daycare or residential care. We didn't want housing on the first floor, tattoo parlors or massage businesses, social services, or marijuana-related businesses. And there were some things that we wanted to make sure we had a CUP for. All of those are outlined in the agreement. We are also, there were a couple of parcels that we needed to transfer to the city for those governmental purposes. So we have the transit center actually sits partially on this parcel. And so what the sales agreement calls for is the transfer of that parcel that the transit center sits on, or the portion of the parcel that the transit center sits on, to the city. And then the plaza for the new Centennial Bridge that we just built also is currently included in that parcel, and so we'd be separating that out and transferring that to the city, that public space. The agreement that you have in your package is in substantial form. It's been reviewed by the attorneys on both sides. I think there's a few other minor changes that are administrative in nature and don't really affect the deal points. I think one of them had to do with saying that this would be used for professional office. There was a concern that professional meant that it had to be a licensed professional, not necessarily some of the other things, you know, a tech company or some of those that we would consider that. So we're working on some language there. I think there's some language on one of the declarations and some of the other things that we're working on. If council wants, or if the successor agency board wants me to go through those in detail, we can. But they are administrative, and the resolution does give us some leeway to hammer those things out over the next 2 days before it's executed. As part of the economic development goals, we do have to state what those are. This will help creation of jobs here in Atascadero and bring jobs, along with the generation of tax revenue, both property tax and sales tax. We hope to see some restaurants or retail, at least in some part of the building. As far as property tax, right now the building is generating zero property tax once it gets into private hands. Not only will we start receiving property tax on the building, but we're really hoping that that spurs further development of that Colony Square. We're hoping that it will increase foot traffic and activity, give continued access to the transportation hub, increased access between Colony Square and downtown, and plaza and pedestrian gathering area, outdoor seating and dining areas. We did have to do an environmental determination, which I think for all of us is probably not intuitive, that the sale of a property would require an environmental determination, but we did that. The initial study has been prepared, and there were no significant adverse effects and no mitigation measures required. I think that Council Member Bourbeau did find an error where we had two boxes checked. One of them was mitigation required. That was an error, but there is no mitigation measures required. The negative declaration has been prepared, and their certificate of negative declaration satisfies all of the CEQA requirements. So in conclusion, the price of the building is for the sale would be $2.2 million. This is not less than the fair market value. In fact, it's at the high end of the broker opinion of value. The sale meets the economic development goals. The city will maintain possession of portions of the parcel for public purposes. They'll be split off into separate parcels. And this is a fair deal for all of the taxing agencies. And with that, I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you. Council questions. Councilmember Bourbeau.
Just to be clear, so that was an error, what we were talking about, where on page 98 it says impact requires mitigation. Will that be corrected so the formal document that's filed by Phil or something by Mr. Dunsmore will be reflect that?
That's correct. That will be corrected prior to recordation of that document.
Got it. And the other ones where it says there's insignificant impact, and I'm wondering how the sale has any impact, significant or otherwise. There were some others where the insignificant impact box had been checked.
That has no effect on the sale nor on the final determination of the neg deck. That's the normal course of action in preparing one of these documents.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you. Councilman Moreno.
Rochelle, for the CUP uses personal services, just trying to refresh my memory, that would include like a day spa or something like that. So when you've got non-allowed uses like massage parlors, but a day spa under personal services where you're doing sort of a variety of, you know, high-end services for clients, that would be with a CUP.
That would be correct.
Okay, thank you.
Any other council questions? Seeing none, I'll open up to the public. And we do often give the opportunity for an applicant to speak first. If you would like to say anything at this time, you'd be welcome. Then we'll open up to the general public. Because sometimes what they say might lead to some more questions.
Thank you. Clint Pierce, San Luis Obispo with Colony Creekside LLC. And I just have to say that we are very excited to promote economic activity and energy in the heart of your downtown. We feel like we can do a really good job working with the city and with the business community in getting life back in that building and really getting a lot of people there during the day. It's going to be really our goal to focus on the 8 hours in the middle of the day, because we all know how heavily parked that area is at night. So we may end up with a nighttime use or two, but it's probably going to be in the minor. We're really going to try and focus on getting folks in there. We feel like there's a high likelihood of getting good, solid employers that are having high wage, just folks that are going to be using other services in town and just getting a lot more life and energy in the heart of downtown. So anyway, thank you. And I would be happy to answer any questions, but I don't really have much more than just to say that we're really excited about it.
Well, we're excited to have you here. And while you're there, are there any council questions? Just enthusiasm up here. Thank you.
Thank you.
I have an unfair question for him, and that is, how fast are you going to be able to get somebody in there?
Well, we're gonna go really focus on it. So it's the clock is ticking. So once we get to start, so we'll push on it. It's not going to be a back burner project.
Thank you.
Very good. Thank you. Any other speaker? Welcome.
Hi, Susan Funk from Atascadero, and I want to express my enthusiasm for action happening on this property. One of the things that I noticed in reviewing the contract, I didn't see any provision in there that it established any safeguard if the property owner, the prospective new one, does not move quickly in developing that property, as was done, we're all hoping for. And one of the real problems that we've had in Atascadero, and I'm sure that all the council members are familiar, is that we have properties that are in private hands, and the owner is either non-resident or is not doing anything with that property, and sometimes for years, like the old Jack in the Box, for instance, other things. And those properties sit like black holes in the middle of the downtown we are all trying to make happen and lively for our community to generate the revenues that we need. In a private transaction, there's not that much the city can do if the owner just sits there. But in this transaction, this agency, as the successor agency to the redevelopment agency, is a party to this contract. And I'm wondering if it would be possible to put in some kind of protection for the taxpayers and the residents of the community for this property, so that if it doesn't move forward in some fashion and ends up sitting there like a black hole, that there would be some opportunity for it to be sold back to this agency and be resold to somebody who could make it move, so that we don't anticipate any problems like some of the bankruptcies and other things that have been issues affecting other properties. But if there's a possibility to do some kind of an amendment of that into the contract, that would not be, it's not something that would be against the interests of the prospective owner who wants to develop this property quickly. So maybe there's a win-win we could do that without it jinxing the deal, that would enable our community to have a little more protection, that property will not sit like a black hole, but will provide the energy and life that we hope for it in making this sale, this asset.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Any other speakers? Seeing none approach, I'll close public comment, bring it back. I would love to answer that question. I think we probably have some folks weighing in. Did I mention, Sarah, you live in California earlier? And the successor agency, I believe we are responsible for about 16% of the value. We have a lot of other partners. State of California would be happy to say, if they don't think we make a good deal, they'll just say, no, it's out. We have less authority. We have 16% of a vote on this compared to if it was a city property, we would have a lot more authority. Now, cities do have the potential to do eminent domain. We could go take away private property. There's not been a council yet that has chosen to do that. And it is tough that, we do have private property rights, and there are some folks that choose to do things different than we would like to do. That's why we are very much interested in getting the best potential partners we possibly can. I personally believe that's what we've got. The particular folks involved in this have an excellent track record, and I'll just speak for that as an individual, having looked at this, that I've got very, if they can't pull it off, I don't know who could, is my personal strong opinion. But I would see if, I also would have to say, and I always appreciate input, but surprisingly, rarely do we hear something new that somebody hasn't already thought of and taken a look at. So I'm going to just see, have we heard anything that is a new idea that we need to consider tonight, or are we in pretty good shape?
I would say you covered it very well. That is certainly something that you guys have considered. There's numerous problems both on the city side and I imagine on the financing side, on the buyer side. As to your comment about the potential purchaser, I will tell you that he is not letting any grass grow under his feet. We have already showed the building, even prior to his owning it, to four or five tenants. And so he is moving quickly, so I certainly share the mayor's belief that this will not sit vacant for a long time.
Thank you. And staff, any other input from staff on responding to that question? And if not, any, is there any discussion on this item by council?
I'm happy to make the motion.
Well, that's too bad because I'm going to beat you to it.
However, before you make that motion,
yes.
could we include in the motion that there are some language revisions that may be necessary to the agreement and possibly some of the exhibits which do not impact the deal points, the purchase price, and things of that nature. One second. The city manager has called my attention to the fact that what I just said is already in the resolution, so I think you're covered.
Very good. But I'm going to let you make the motion if you want. I just love the process we've gone through.
You do it. Go for it.
Well, thank you. I will go ahead because this particular project has been a long time in coming. And so with that, I'll move staff's recommendation.
And I'll second.
Roll call, please.
Councilmember Moreno.
Yes, ma'am.
Councilmember Verbo.
Yes.
Councilmember Sturdivant.
Yes.
And Mayor O'Malley.
Yes.
Motion passes 4-0.
Thank you. Why are you still in your chair? You've got work to do. And thank you. We look forward to a great partnership once again. And we now move on to board announcements and reports. Any board member having a comment? Seeing none, we are adjourned. Thank you.